You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song in my soul.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. It is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, sitting down here in between free practice sessions at the Australian Grand Prix. I might not be in Melbourne, but at least I'm recording the show in and around an active session for this weekend's Grand Prix, and it's kind of cool to do so. Got a pretty busy show coming up tonight, and lots of things to talk about. If you want some more insight as to what's going on in and around the Australian Grand Prix, just back up and check out episode 524, which came out on Monday. Our good friend Stuart Bell came by to talk, bring us up to speed with everything that's going on around the Australian Grand Prix. Just looking at the schedule, so the race itself will go at 9 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday night or midnight Eastern. So if you're looking for something to do on your Saturday and you don't mind staying up a little bit, you know, even if it was midnight time Pacific, I would stay up and watch it live. So exciting to see that another, you know, really time-friendly race start for us here on the West Coast. We've been pretty lucky over the last, the first three races of the season. It'll switch around pretty soon once the schedule shifts to other parts of the globe, but I'll enjoy it while I can. I'm not really a big one to get up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. On a Sunday morning to watch a Grand Prix. I'll wait a couple hours. You know, I'll still get up at like 7, 7:30, 8 o'clock and watch the race on, start it a little bit late and watch it as it's going. You know, it's tough to get out of bed, especially for me at that time of the morning. So just a quick update here, just what's going on around the show. Sat down, had a good conversation with Mark, Mr. Mark Hamilton. We had a chance to see what was going on with both of us. So it was really nice to talk to Mark. We've been trading messages and talking about things. So basically what's going on, Mark was just tired. He wanted to get a break. He had some other things going on, needed to get away from the show, and it was good because there was a lot of things I think we were both, you know, kind of going on some assumptions what the other person was doing, but I was just glad to talk to him. I was getting kind of worried that maybe there was something else going on with him, but you know, that's not the case, and there's certainly no hard feelings between the two of us. I know that one thing that Mark doesn't like having to talk about is things like the Christian Horner case and whatnot, and it was good to talk to him, and now that we are able to, you know, talk about exactly what's going on with both of us, I realize that perhaps I was a little bit unkind towards Mark, and I apologized to him for that. And we'll move on. We'll see what's going on. And the main thing is, you know, there's no bad feelings between the two of us. And you know, we're still friendly. We're good friends, and that's the important thing. And the point is, Mark is just a good guy. He's a good person, and hopefully we can sort something out. And we'll see if he rediscovers the passion. I know he had a lot on in and around the show. But he's in good spirits, and he said for me to pass along his best wishes to everyone that's listening tonight. Okay, well, before we get into the show tonight, let's just very quickly just go down the driver standings. You know, it's been a couple of weeks since we've had a Grand Prix, and it feels kind of strange, you know, like I remember a time when it seemed like there was always a week or two in between Grands Prix, but it seems nowadays that if we even have a weekend off in between races, it seems like an eternity, and it's hasn't even been 2 weeks since we had the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix at the Jeddah Corniche circuit, but that seems like such a long, long time ago. Anyways, in the Drivers' Championship, we have Max Verstappen from Red Bull leading the way with 51 points, Sergio Perez's teammate second with 36, Charles Leclerc not that far behind in third with 28 points, George Russell from Mercedes has 18, and then Oscar Piastri, the young Australian driver, has 16 points. Moving over to the Constructors' Championship, we have Red Bull leading the way with 87 points, and most likely they will crack three digits in the World Championship this weekend. So Red Bull, 87 points. Ferrari currently second with 49, McLaren with 28, Mercedes with 26, and Aston Martin top five place in the Constructors so far with 13 points. And that is 12 ahead of Haas, who is the last constructor who has scored a point through two races this season. And Haas only has a single point so far. Okay, let's get over to the juicy stuff now, our fantasy league. We have, been down this a couple of times, but let's just refresh everybody's memories. So in first place currently is Kerry Duro F1. P2 is Layman's Racing Team. P3 and P4 are both dropping, while P1 and 2 have risen up through the standings after two races. So in P3, we have the Red Beards. P4 is Hamilton 8-time champions. P5 rising up. Well, P5, 6, and 7 all rising through the standings. Here is Super Karate Monkey Death Car. What a crazy sounding name that is. Anyways, their fifth, Sausage, is 6. The Myths Fits is 7th. Holding steady at 8th is Austin JV. And then dropping down through the standings with a joint P9 tie at the moment is Cranger, and Tails I Win. So we'll see if there's a change in the standings this weekend. Okay, just want to go over a couple of things here because I'm a little bit tired about some of the stuff we're going to talk about a little bit in this segment. Wanted to kind of back up and didn't really mention, I think, the other night with Stu, just got into a lot of other news in and around the Australian and Grand Prix, but just more about the Albert Park circuit and what we're going to see this weekend, just in terms of tire selection. Pirelli is bringing the softest tire compounds in their range. They're bringing the C3 hards, C4 mediums, and the C5 softs. You know, it's been a little bit easier the last couple of years where they just kind of stick with a hard, medium, and soft compound. Tire when we had like hards, medium, soft, super softs, ultra soft, ridiculous soft, and all these different ones. But it was kind of cool. You know, I think there was about five tire compounds now, but they just go with the hard, medium, and soft, which is, I guess, a little bit easier for all of us to keep track of. Anyways, this weekend at the Albert Park circuit, we will see 58 laps. Where did I put my notes here? 58 laps. And our fastest lap last year was a 120.235 set by Sergio Perez. The race distance is 306.12 kilometers, 58 laps, and the circuit length is 5.278 kilometers. So there's been a bit of a change. They reprofiled the circuit a couple of years ago, and that shaved a couple of seconds off of the lap. So it's now 5.278 kilometers or 3.28 miles. Prior to that, since the circuit opened in 96 until 2020, it was a little bit longer. It was 5.3 kilometers or 3.3 miles long. That's 16 turns. The new reprofiled circuit has 14. And the previous lap record before the track was reprofiled last year was a 124.125 that was set by Ferrari's Michael Schumacher way back in 2004, driving the appropriately named Ferrari F2004. So there you go. All right. So just a refresh from last year. I'll just pull that up in my notes here. Where did it go? It's all the way down at the bottom here, of course. It's always in the last place that you look, right? So last year we had in qualifying, we had Max Verstappen on pole, George Russell a second fastest, Lewis Hamilton third fastest. Then fourth, fifth, and sixth was Fernando Alonso, Carlos Sainz, Lance Stroll. Seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth were Charles Leclerc, Alex Albon, Pierre Gasly, and Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas, rounding out the top 10 on the grid last year. So let's take a look here at the times. So Max's pole setting time last year was a 116.732, and that was about a tenth and a half faster than, well, a little over a tenth and a half faster than George Russell's P2 time. His Q3 time, let's take a look. That was a 116.968, and those were the only two cars to dip into the high 116s. Everybody else, even Lewis and all the other cars that qualified, made it into the top 10 shootout in Q3, were all above 1 minute 17 seconds. Lewis just at 117.104. Of course, we had a bit of a crazy finish to the race last year. We only had 12 cars finishing the race, and there was a that was a bit of a wild finish. We lost due to collisions at the NPR Gasly Esteban Ocon, Nick DeVries, Logan Sargeant, Kevin Magnussen all had accidents. George Russell dropped out on lap 17 with an engine failure. He was the only one that had a mechanical. Even Alex Albon and Charles Leclerc, they all had accidents or collisions at some point in the race. Anyways, when it was all said and done, the final race classification was Max Verstappen winning. Lewis Hamilton came home Lewis came home P2. Fernando Alonso was P3. And then rounding out the top 10 was Lance Stroll, Sergio Perez, Lando Norris, Nico Hülkenberg, Oscar Piastri, Zhou Guan Yu, and Yuki Tsunoda for AlphaTauri came home in P10. So there you go. All right, well, I do have the weather forecast for Melbourne here in front of me. Contrary to what Stu and I were talking about a couple of nights ago, the weather forecast is now a little bit more set in stone than it was earlier in the week. And when we were talking on Monday night, or Sunday local time here in Vancouver, the extended forecast for Melbourne was calling for perhaps some rain come weekend. Looks like that has now been backed off from. It's going to be completely different. So it looks like it's going to be a mix of sun and clouds come Saturday and Sunday afternoon. We're looking at about 21 degrees Celsius or about 70 degrees Fahrenheit, but less than a 10% chance of rain on both Saturday and Sunday. And looks like the likelihood of a wet race or wet qualifying, at least at this moment, doesn't look like it's going to happen. So maybe a little bit of a mixed feelings there for me. I was hoping for something a little bit more challenging. Okay, so just going and taking now quickly a look at FP1 that finished up about an hour ago. So in FP1, Lando Norris was the fastest driver. Lando setting a time of 118.564. So not quite onto the pace that we saw last year in qualifying. Not quite yet, at any rate. Max Verstappen was about 200ths. Slower than his McLaren rival. Max setting a time of 118.582. George Russell set a time of 118.597 seconds. Charles Leclerc was third with a 118.599. Yuki Tsunoda was fifth fastest with a 118.621. And the other drivers in the top 10 was Sergio Perez sixth, Lance Stroll seventh, Carlos Sainz eighth, Lewis Hamilton was the ninth fastest driver, and Oscar Piastri was the 10th fastest driver. Oscar setting a FP1 time of, let's take a look, a 118.918. So about half a second slower than his McLaren teammate. So there you go. All right, let's jump into the news. And what do we have here? So first of all, according to Johnny Herbert, the ex Formula One driver and pundit, he feels that Max Verstappen leaving Red Bull going to Mercedes is, quote, pretty close to a done deal, end quote. So this story has been out there. Well, maybe not so much a story, but this rumor has been out there for a little while. And this is just a part of the ongoing saga of the Christian Horner scandal that has just been, still kind of snowballing and rolling around there for the last couple of months. This was an interesting one because, you know, we've heard different people like Jos Verstappen, Max's dad. There's lots of people calling or saying that the team is on the verge of falling apart. And, perhaps that could happen. So Johnny Herbert is one of the people among many that has thrown his hat into the ring of people that want Christian Horner to resign from Red Bull. And he really feels that that the team could actually rip apart is the words that he used. Anyways, I wasn't able to confirm this link. It was a website called Bet Ideas. I've checked out the link. I haven't been able to corroborate it. Anyways, the quote from Johnny Herbert, who himself drove for Benetton amongst other teams and won three Grands Prix during his career. Johnny had to say, quote, I hear it's pretty close to a done deal, brokered between Max and Mercedes. Is it a power play by the Verstappen team? Possibly. I don't think it's the best scenario for Max. Mercedes have struggled for the last 3 years and still haven't got a good car. The whole shenanigans are ripping Red Bull apart, as Jos Verstappen has said. It is ripping the team apart to the extent they might as well lose their biggest asset. And that is not Christian Horner, that is Max Verstappen. He is the one who's binding everything together to allow the team to achieve what they have done over the past couple of years, end quote. So, interesting, right? Herbert also went on and speculated that that if Max Verstappen leaves Red Bull, he feels that, and his exact quote is, very strong chance that he and Adrian Newey will be reunited at Mercedes if the both of them leave Red Bull together. So that would be rather crazy, because there have been plenty of rumors linking Adrian Newey with a move possibly to Ferrari, where Lewis Hamilton, of course, is going for next year. Anyways, Johnny Herbert went on to say, quote, Adrian Newey will be very important. If the rumors are true, there is a chance that Adrian would go with him being Max Verstappen. I think there's a very strong chance of that happening. Going with Max to Mercedes for another challenge would be beneficial to F1 and very beneficial for the team, but they will need Adrian to be able to turn it around at Mercedes. Lewis has left because he doesn't feel like the team can provide him with a car to win his eighth world title. That makes sense. For Max to go there would not be a logical choice, end quote. So that is the $64,000 question deal, whether or not Max Verstappen is going to stay, whether or not he's going to go. There have been plenty of questions put to Max on that exact topic in some of the different media sessions down in Melbourne over the last day or two. When he was asked by reporters, Max said, what he's going to say, if he's going to stay at Red Bull until his current contract is up in 2028. Max Verstappen told the reporters in Melbourne, quote, that is why, of course, I signed the deal in the first place. And that is what I said before. Also, I'm happy with the team. And of course, it is very important that we try to keep the key players in the team for a longer period of time, because that's what goes well. That's what goes with the performance as well. At the end of the day, it is a performance business. It's the same as if I wouldn't perform, I wouldn't be sitting here. So I know how that works. But yeah, for sure, with the deal in place, that is also my intention for sure, to be here until the end, because of course, it would be a great story for me personally also, if you just see it out to the end, because it means that I've been part of one family and one team, end quote. Anyway, he was pressed a little bit further to expand upon who he meant by key players at Red Bull. And Max replied, quote, many people, I'm not going to name them because though, then people will know, end quote. So I think, Adrian Newey would be one. Helmut Marko would be another. Max and Helmut, seem to be pretty close when it comes to things like that. So we'll see. This whole Christian Horner thing has been, quite the scandal, obviously, and rightly so for the last couple of months. I mean, there's a lot of things going on about that. Christian Horner was cleared by the independent investigation. The person that levied the accusations against Christian Horner has been at least suspended from the team. And, this story just, it's not a good one. It's not one I particularly like talking about, but, can't really ignore it either, right? The next one is David Croft, the Sky Sports F1 commentator, was speaking with Fox Sports Australia over the last couple of days. And in an interview, he was just talking about the Christian Horner situation and talked about what he called a battle for power. Crofty's quote was, what seems to be a battle for power behind the scenes is taking place not to the detriment of their sporting performance at the moment. But if there's a lot going on in the background that is grabbing the attention and draining the energy levels, that might take a toll eventually. It is a long, long season ahead. Yeah, absolutely. So going on, Croft had to say, quote, Marco at the end of the day is the guy who has guided Max Verstappen in Formula One and throughout his time in Formula One. Marco has that special relationship with the drivers because that's his job. That is his purpose. Christian Horner's future is subject to the results of an appeal. I'm sure it would take a toll not just on Christian, but his family as well. So there you go. I don't think there's anything too shocking in Crofty's comments there. But, he's right about one thing. Whatever's happening at Red Bull at the moment isn't adversely affecting what's happening on the track. I mean, it's not affecting the drivers, at least openly, publicly. But behind the scenes, who knows? But very, very good point. It is a long, long, long season. I mean, we're only in the third week of March at the moment. The season is not going to wrap up until early December, which will mean here in the Northern Hemisphere will almost be the start of winter. For those of you down in the Southern Hemisphere, that'll almost be the start of summer. So, there's a lot of time to go here. I mean, this is an extremely long season, and anything could happen between now and then. So just talking quickly now about Sergio Perez, Max's teammate, before we head into a break. Sergio says that he doesn't want to speak for Max Verstappen, but his own contract does not include what he calls a helmet Marco clause. Sergio went to go and clarify some of the terms of his deal at Red Bull. He said, quote, "I don't have that clause. I don't want that clause Max has in his contract. I think it is best that you ask him. I think Max, as far as I know, has a contract with the team, is fully committed with the team. The rest, I think that's not for me to comment. It's nothing to do with me. I'm focusing on my decisions, on what I have to do. And I think for us to be talking about other drivers when we don't know any facts, I don't see any point in doing so," which, seems to be fair enough. Anyways, Checo went on to say, quote, "I think the team is in a very strong position because, I mean, with the results we're currently having, the harmony that is there in the team, I think to achieve that is just that it takes a lot of years probably. And now the dynamics, everyone, the team is working really well together. The whole engineering group is really united, and you can see that on the track and how efficient we've been in the last year. So I don't think I see any reason to change it. And obviously it will be a blow for the team if Max were to leave," end quote. Yeah, obviously, I think that would be a huge blow to the team. Max, three-time world champion. Now he's won, 46 of the last 68 races. We broke down that stat on the show last week. And Max has been a one-person wrecking crew to Formula One over the past several seasons. It really is absolutely remarkable, the job that he's done. And of course, I mean, no one person is irreplaceable, but I think that maybe we have to think that a little bit deeper, a little bit harder when it comes to Max Verstappen. And that doesn't mean that just because you're the best driver in the best car that the next person could come in and do an equally good job. I mean, just ask any one of the other drivers that have been in that revolving seat in that second car in the team over the last couple of years. They've been pretty ruthless when it comes to switching up drivers in that organization, because it's always been Max and whoever else has been alongside him. And if they haven't been able to measure up even remotely close to what Max has been doing, then they've been very, very ruthless in cutting them and letting them go. I think it was kind of interesting, though, in the that this was an article that was written by our good friend Sam Cooper over at Planet F1, that Sergio didn't really address his situation at Red Bull very much at all. I mean, he kind of skirted around it. And fair enough. I mean, you don't want to speculate about other people's contracts, but I think that Checo, at least in the quotes that I've seen and what I've heard so far in some of the interviews, has been quite deft at maybe not speaking about his own situation with the team too much, other than just kind of saying the usual kind of generic things of, I got to do what I need to do, and everything else will kind of take care of itself, words to those effects. Anyways, going to take a quick break here. Going to come back on the flip side. Going to talk about Danny Ricciardo. Going to talk about some more shenanigans, let's put it that way, when we come back after the break. So please don't go away. Be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the show, and was a little bit off topic earlier in the show. Wanted to make sure that give a shout out to our good friends at the Race Weekend magazine. You can check them out at theraceweekend.com, and that is RACEWKND.com. Use our special promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout and receive a 10% discount on a year subscription. Say that again properly. Anyways, that is the Race Weekend magazine, and that is RACEWKND.com. All right, also want to give a little bit of a shout out, or a big shout out, I should say, to RacingExclusives.com. You can find them online at, obviously, RacingExclusives.com for unique Formula One memorabilia. And quite often, most of the times, they have a certificate of authenticity, and Thies and his team over there have done a fantastic job to put together a fantastic collection. So check them out at racingexclusives.com. Okay, well, now let's talk about Danny Ricciardo, the Racing Bulls, the RB driver, whatever we're calling them, V-Carb. I can never figure it out. Anyways, he's talked a little bit to the media over the past couple of days just about how things have gone for him in the first couple of races of the year. He finished 13th in Bahrain at the season opener, and then he had a 41-second pit stop in Saudi Arabia, which put him all the way back in 16th at the end of the race. Ricciardo said, quote, "I don't buy into any of the stories, if you will. I know it is my position as the team, and I know that, let's say, some potential things that could happen if I do very well. But it's like everything, any team that you're with, if you have a really strong season, it could lead to maybe something different or increase your position where you currently are. It is always our objective to do the best we can. I think whatever happens will happen or can happen. My objective is to drive this car as good as I can. Now, getting back into a car, I'm definitely not looking too far ahead. Am I thinking about the Red Bull seat that you speak of? No. I know that if I do some really good results, maybe then I can present itself potentially. It's not something I think about because 12 months ago I wasn't in that position. I didn't know if I'd be back in this position, so I just take it weekend after weekend." And also, Ricciardo had some comments about some of the criticism levied at him in the media by Helmut Marko. Anyways, the original quote was from Helmut Marko, that is, "There's a lot at stake here for both Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo. Yuki's qualifying was very good, and Ricciardo will have to come up with something soon." Ricciardo went to address those comments made by Helmut Marko at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Danny said, quote, "It's not annoying. The most important part of our job is the driving, but a big part of it is talking to the media. When things go well, everyone is talking positively, and when they don't talk so positively. I know that when I came back here because I believe I can do it, I believe I belong here. When people ask, do you have a point to prove or keep people happy, I'm here for myself because I know I can still do it. I do want to make people proud, but if someone says something, I know it already because I've already told myself that and I know what is expected. So of course I want to be qualifying in Q3 and get the results I believe I can, but it's tight. We are in such a tight midfield. In Bahrain and Quali, I knew I didn't quite put the lap together together. I should have, and I put my hand up for that, but that's the difference from maybe P14 to Q3. End of Q1 in Saudi, P9 to P16 was less than a tenth, so you can very quickly look like a hero or not. That's where every tenth counts, and that's where I look to myself first, end quote. So yeah, I mean, Danny Ricciardo, there's, you know, that would be like the real feel-good story, right? Because I mean, if you go back and look at the career that he had with Red Bull prior to 2018, and he won, what, 7-8 Grand Prix in that time, was a regular on the podium, and Ricciardo, as all accounts are, that he's exactly the way that that you see him on TV, on Netflix, in the media. He's just, you know, he's a very genuine kind of goofy guy with a good quirky sense of humor, and he's a very, very genuine, you know, he is very, you know, he's exactly like you see, and I think that he's very realistic about where he's at, and I think that Helmut Marko, of course, people are going to ask him questions about his drivers and what they're doing to get a nice juicy quote like that. And of course, if you know, you have a driver like Danny Ricciardo and you know, Sergio Perez, because we all just almost assume that that Perez is going to be back next year, and I'm sure Sergio Perez will be like, well, you know, I'm not out of here just yet. You know, I have intentions of keeping the seat. This doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be gone at the end of the year. I mean, he could still very well retain that seat if he does a very, very good job this year, unless something else has happened behind the scenes that we're not aware of. But it is his seat to lose. And Danny Ricciardo, I mean, he was a proven quantity in Formula One at one point. And after he moved away from that team in 2018, first at Renault, then moving over to McLaren, it just didn't work out quite for him. And, you know, I must admit, I'm a fan of Danny Ricciardo. You know, I love the personality. I love that, you know, the quirkiness he has to his personality, because, you know, I've interviewed many, many athletes and, you know, sports executives over the years, and some of them are just dreadful to talk to. Not that I'm saying they're dreadful people, but some of them, it's like anything else. Some of them love doing the media work. Some of them love it, but they're not very good at it. Some people aren't very good at it and don't like it. And, you know, that always comes across. The ones that don't want to be there, you're just like, okay, let's just get a couple of questions. This is painful for both of us, but let's just do what we need to do and just move on. But I appreciate Ricardo's frankness and his openness. And I think he wears his heart on his sleeve. And I appreciate that, you know, when things are going good, he's happy and he's bubbly and he's smiling and he's laughing. But, you know, during those years at Renault and McLaren, I mean, we didn't quite always see the happy, you know, laughing, bubbly Danny Ricciardo that we were kind of used to. And, you know, I felt bad for him. But I mean, this is a very, very competitive business. And just because people like you doesn't mean you're entitled to a race seat. And obviously, he would know that. But, you know, it's interesting to think, because, you know, what could potentially happen, because, you know, I know that Drive to Survive isn't an accurate reflection of reality, but that's that one episode in the latest drop that, you know, really kind of goes over the what happened with Nyck de Vries and him losing his seat mid-season at AlphaTauri, and Ricciardo coming back into the picture and having that test and a bit of a damp and greasy Silverstone circuit. It was a feel-good story last year, and it was you know, again, I don't want to take away a lot from Max Verstappen, because it's not like he's, you know, he's had to work for all the race wins that that he's had over the past couple of years. I mean, he hasn't had any, you know, very much competition most of the time to win all those races. But when it came to something else, you know, talking about something other than Max Verstappen, specifically like that Danny Ricciardo story, for me, I enjoyed it, because, you know, I love these underdog stories and I'd like to see him pull it off. But whether or not he can do enough this year to impress everybody at Red Bull, you know, who knows? That's a great question. That will be one that will continue to unfold each and every weekend in front of us over the course of the year. But what with some very, very big race seats open, you know, at Mercedes still, obviously, maybe even Red Bull having one, or maybe even two race seats empty. You know, it's really quite. I couldn't picture that. You know, it's just this has to be the team, that the car that everybody would love to get into. And we were talking earlier in the show about Johnny Herbert saying that he feels like a move for Max Verstappen from Red Bull to Mercedes is all but a done deal, that, you know, That I just can't do the math in that one mentally. It's just like I can't picture that reality happening. But who knows? But I mean, the thing is that we don't see multiple moves to some of the big teams each and every year that frequently. You know, we quite often will see drivers come in and they'll re-up deals and things like that. So I mean, the Lewis to from Mercedes to Ferrari for 2025, that was a huge one, and regardless of Mercedes have been struggling over the past couple of years, you have to think at some point that this team is going to put it back together, because they have an incredibly talented organization. There are a lot of very, very smart people, and they have the record to prove it over the past decade or so. They were obviously very, very dominant, and you have to think that at some point that the law of averages is just going to catch up, and Mercedes are going to get back and do what they do very well, and that's winning races and championships. And of course, Red Bull is really going to try and do their best to prevent them or Ferrari or anyone else taking the championships away from them. But the big question is, will be who will be behind the steering wheel of their cars? Will it be Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez? Will it be Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo? Will it be somebody completely different? So I guess the only thing we can say is watch this space. Okay, so now moving over to some of the other stuff. This is a less than fun stuff to talk about. Things like the talks of all the shenanigans and the underhandedness and things like that. I don't really enjoy all that stuff, because, for me, Formula One, it's a distraction. It's a pleasant distraction from the daily grind and all the, the things out there that are worrisome, whether it comes to putting food on the table in these very expensive times, to a lot of the horrible things that you hear going on in the world, from literally minute by minute and hour to hour of every day of the year. So when you hear of underhandedness in Formula One, it really is quite disappointing, but and upsetting. But when you think about it, I mean, it's always been there. But anyways, talking about Susie Wolf, who is the Mercedes of Total Wolf, the Mercedes team principal, was really in the center of a controversy in December of last year when the FIA announced that they were looking into a potential of a conflict of interest between with Susie and Total Wolf. And, very, very, very quickly it went away. Both Toto and Susie denied it, and there was a media report that suggested the confidential information had been shared between the two of them, and that teams have been complaining to the FIA. These allegations were strongly denied. It came out afterwards into the public realm, and then the FIA ended up issuing a statement saying, quote, "The FIA is aware of media speculation centered on the allegation of information of a confidential nature being passed to an F1 team principal from a member of FOM personnel. The FIA compliance department is looking into the matter," end quote. So neither Toto or Susie Wolf were named in that statement. And Susie, she's also the director of the F1 Driver Academy. They weren't specifically named in that statement or anything else. But it seemed at the time it was pretty obvious who the FIA were addressing specifically. And it was also their identity that was also briefed to the media. So all of all the other nine teams that were rivals, obviously, to Mercedes said they weren't the ones that complained to the FIA. And then the FIA all of a sudden and very quietly backed down. And only a couple of days after the initial statement came out, the FIA said that the matter was over. It was closed. There was actually no case that needed to be looked into further, and that there wasn't even a reason to formally investigate it. So Susie Wolf has felt that that was not good enough. She felt that there was a lot of reputational damage done to them by the FIA by going public at the time that they did. So back at the time, Susie wrote on social media, quote, "I might have been collateral damage in an unsuccessful attack on somebody else or the target of a failed attempt to discredit me personally, but I've worked too hard to have my reputation called into question by an unfounded press release," end quote. So there's been a lot of speculation about the source of the original media reports that started the whole procedure and the comments from the FIA right at the very beginning. And did that actually come as a result of somewhere within the FIA itself? There was no public apology from the FIA after what they did and what happened. So Susie Wolf has now taken it. She's leveled up. So she's taken it to the French courts to get to the bottom of what happened. And a couple of days ago, she put a post out on social media saying, quote, "I can confirm that I've personally filed a criminal complaint in the French courts on the 4th of March in relation to the statements made about me by the FIA last December. There has still not been any transparency or accountability in relation to the conduct of the FIA and its personnel in this matter. I feel more than ever it is important to stand up, call out improper behavior, and make sure people are held to account. Whilst some may think silence absolves them from responsibility, it does not." End quote. So there you go. I really applaud her for doing this and for standing up for herself. And we'll see. Wait and see what happens. I mean, she's only just filed this criminal complaint only about 2 weeks ago. So I mean, the 21st day. So about 2.5 weeks ago, and we'll have to see what happened. So in that time, there were also allegations leveled at FIA President Mohamed Ben Sulayem. Some of the interference that he was alleged to doing, being involved with. He's been cleared of that, and the FIA has said it's not policy to reveal the details of their investigation into his dealings. So their recent press release regarding Ben Sulayem was, quote, "At the FIA, inquiries and complaints are received and managed by the compliance officer and the ethics committee where were appropriate. Both bodies operate autonomously, guaranteeing strict confidentiality throughout the process. As a consequence, and in general, we are unable to confirm the receipt of any specific complaint, and it's unlikely we will be able to provide further comment of the complaints that we may receive from any of the parties." End quote. So we'll see what happens there. Well, it is what it is, right? It's discouraging, but I'm glad that Susie Wolf at least is standing up to address what was done to her and her husband a couple of months ago. Lewis Hamilton has backed up Susie Wolf in what she's doing. Hamilton said, quote, "Firstly, I'm very incredibly proud of Susie. She's so brave. She stands for such great values. She's such a leader in a world where often people are silenced. For her to be standing up sends such a great message. I love that she's taking it out of this world, filling it from outside, because there's a real lack of accountability here within the sport, within the FIA. The things that are happening behind closed doors, there's no transparency. There's clearly no accountability. How can you trust the sport and what is happening here if you don't have that?" End quote. Lewis also went on to say, "Hopefully this is a stand she's taken now will create change, have a positive impact, and especially for women. We're living in a time where the message is, if you file a complaint, you'll be fired. That is a terrible narrative to be projecting to the world. So especially when we're talking about inclusivity here in the sport, we need to make sure we're staying true to the core values here." End quote. His teammate George Russell also added, quote, "You trust the leaders in this sport to have the best interest at their heart rather than their own interests. When we don't have the facts and figures and there is no transparency, it will think that there's something being hidden. That's why it's so important for the sport now to send the right message to everyone who's supporting Formula One, watching Formula One, wants to be involved in Formula One, that things just aren't swept under the carpet." End quote. Absolutely. I agree with both what George Russell and Lewis Hamilton said. I'm glad Susie Wolf is doing what she's doing, but I think that last little soundbite there, sentence or two from George Russell, where he says that I'll read again, quote, "That's why it's so important for the sport right now to send the right message to everyone who's supporting Formula One, watching Formula One, and wants to be involved in Formula One, that things aren't just swept under the carpet," end quote. And we won't know. I'm sure we'll never know what happened in the Christian Horner case, but that's it just doesn't feel right. You know, it feels like that there's a lot more that that didn't come out, and that's just pure speculation on my behalf. You know, there's clearly a lack of transparency there. I mean, if you go back and just look at the weird circumstances around what happened to Susie and Total Wolf of 3 or 4 months ago in the middle of December, that was just strange that they would come out, make these sort of veiled accusations, also, you know, just to walk it back completely, you know, only a couple of days later. That's just bizarre. You know, then Mohammed bin Sulayem having these allegations of interference, you know, levied against him about, you know, interfering in a penalty that was given to Fernando Alonso, and then around the certification, the track at Las Vegas. I don't know. It's just you know, that words and that phrase, lack of transparency, it certainly is there. It's frustrating. And, you know, it's a credibility thing. If there's things that are going on, and it's, you know, if there's nothing to hide, why cover it up? And, you know, just speaking about the Christian Horner case, is that you would think that was something that was so inflammatory, that something that could, you know, ruin his reputation, that, you know, he's been very quiet on it, which you would kind of expect, but you would think that had something to do, or something that to involve him personally, where it could really damage his reputation, his credibility once and for all. And perhaps it has, regardless of the outcome. You know, if it was different than the way it is, then he was cleared by the independent investigation. Maybe that damage has been done, but if it has, and he truly has nothing to, you know, to hide, you would have thought that there might've been some sort of like lawsuits, you know, for defamation or libel or whatever it is. And I think the fact that there isn't, you know, is very, very, very interesting. You know, it kind of makes me wonder what really is going on. And again, I mean, we can sit here and speculate and ask these questions. I mean, we really don't know, because there aren't any facts. I mean, the you know, if you kind of go back a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Ford CEO Jim Farley talking about, you know, his concerns about the allegations and the investigation into Christian Horner's behavior, and the fact that if things came out that Ford wasn't happy with, and it was against their core value and organization, that maybe he would, you know, or Ford would have to rethink their involvement with the team. So, you know, they are partnered with Red Bull Powertrains for 2026 and beyond. And that's why I think that, you know, if there was something truly bad that had happened, that, you know, a cover up would just be the worst thing to happen. Because if it ever did come to light, and whistleblowers seem to be emboldened, and, you know, in this day and age, and hopefully that's always the case, or maybe they're not always emboldened. I guess it's a kind of it would depend on each unique situation. So, anyways, there's too much for them to lose if they covered something up, is basically what I'm getting at. You know, this last one here, and I just can't help but shake my head at this one. I know that this would drive Hammy crazy if we were talking about this together right now, but holy smokes. So it's a former Formula One driver, Haas driver, Nikita Mazepin, has had sanctions lifted against that were levied against him by the European Union's General Court. So when Russia invaded Ukraine back in the spring of 2022, you know, himself, you know, Mazepin and his father Dmitry were singled out as people that were subjected to you know, punitive restrictive measures and sanctions, which included freezing of funds and bans from entering member states in the European Union. Mazepin was axed by Haas right before the start of 2022, and they also had a deal with his father's company, Uralkali Chemical Company, all to do with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mazepin is since then has gone back to racing in the Asian Le Mans Series, and has been trying for a long time to get removed from sanction lists around the world. He's been unsuccessful to this point, but the EU has now changed their mind and said that Mazepin should be taken off the list because there was, there was no evidence of there being any ties with his father beyond the obvious familial ones. So, you know, his father is one that sponsored a lot of his racing activities and things like that. you know, I'm not obviously one to, you know, have people unfairly punished for things that they didn't do, but, you know, I think where it's ironic in this one, in this case, is that, you know, love him or hate him, Nikita Mazepin isn't exactly the most stand-up character, and, you know, that doesn't mean that he should be unfairly punished, but... You know, it is what it is. I mean, if you know, he truly has no dirty money, you know, or connections to it, you know, fair enough. You know, if the reasons to put him on a sanctions list aren't entirely justified, and he's sort of guilty by association or some sort of profiling, you know, that's not really fair either. But you know, let's just say, you know, when it comes to him, you know, history is a complicated at any rate, and you just need to do a couple of Google searches to find out the history of Nikita Mazepin to find out why so many people find him rather distasteful. Anyways, just leave it at that. Not going to get into any more on that bit. Just going to leave it right there. Going to park it here for a moment. We're going to take a really, really quick break here. Going to come back on the flip side. Got a couple of more relevant stories. You know, I know that there's been some juicy ones there, the speculation about perhaps Max going to leave Red Bull and go to Mercedes at some point in the future. That's kind of an interesting to talk about. But I mean, other than that, you know, it's all been about these, you know, shenanigans and less than, you know, below, you know, board kind of under the table kind of stories this week. And that's not really why any of us are here. But at least to finish off the show, I've got some stories to do with actual Formula One news. And that's what we're here for, isn't it? To talk about the cars, to talk about the drivers. We'll do that in just a moment. So please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, welcome back to the show. A couple more stories to go over before we turn off the lights tonight. Anyways, just talking about Lewis Hamilton, Mercedes, and the W15, which is their contender this year for the World Championship. This year, they've had you know, some issues to start off the year. I mean, they're better than in a better spot now when they were a calendar year ago. You know, they're still not quite where they need to be. You know, they've had, like I say, they've had some problems. They've got a more conventional downwash side pod architecture to the car, which you know, is to try and help solve some of the rear end instability. But when they come into the race this weekend, they're only fourth in the Constructors' Championship, and they've you know, they're behind Ferrari and McLaren, the constructors. So even though that, you know, the car basically still has a lot to do or a lot to offer, it is not an evil sister, as he called it, compared to last year's car. Total Wolf had previously described the ground effect Mercedes as a diva, a miserable thing and a nasty piece of work. Lewis went on to say, quote, is definitely not that evil sister or anything like that. I do think we have an amazing car. It has a lot of potential in it. We just haven't maximized it at the moment through setup. We're obviously not happy with the performance in those first couple of races, but I think there's a lot more potential in it that we just haven't quite extracted yet. So that's what everyone's focus is on, just trying to understand the car. We're hoping that this weekend is a step forward. There's a huge amount of work that has gone on. Everyone heads are down in the numbers, and I feel positive this weekend. We've had two not such great races, but there's a long way ahead, end quote. So there you go. You know, fair enough. You know, I think what's interesting now compared to like this time last year, I mean, when it came into 2023, they were, you know, it introduced the W14, which was an iteration on the W13, which was the first car that they launched in this the current set of technical regulations. You know, it was a real nasty car with a lot of issues with porpoising and all that. It was that zero side pod concept car, and it was interesting because they struggled all through 2022, and they kept saying the same things that, you know, we think fundamentally we have a great car, we feel like there's a lot of performance that we can still unlock and extract of this car, and they were never able to do it. And I was really looking towards the start of last season 2023 with a lot of curiosity as to what Mercedes might do for last year, and I must admit, like many other people, I was very, very surprised that when it came times to launch the cars and we saw the W14, which was their contender last year, it was just an iteration on the W13, and they weren't able to solve the problems over the off season between 2022 and 2023, and it was just more of the same. You know, they did say that they had a plan B in hand if they needed to, they would pivot and they would do something about it, and that's absolutely what they decided to do in the end. They did get better after they changed the car and went with the other concept. You know, the plan B, as Toto Wolff called it. But I have to have to admit that this year that we're almost a year ahead from they were this time last year. But you know, it's the verbiage, the language is still almost identically the same. So they're sitting right now, you know, behind Red Bull, Mercedes. Pardon me, Red Bull, Ferrari, and the champion, and it's just not going the way they do, right? And fascinating thing, because Mercedes is this very powerful team that has very, very competent and very clever set of people that work there, and they also have the resources to do it. So I always kind of wonder, you know, main reasons behind their success before the cost cap introduced was the fact that, you know, there was no cost cap, and if there was a problem, they could just kind of throw people and money at it like there was no tomorrow, and just come up with a solution. So I really do think that a lot of the problems that they have isn't the fact that they can't solve it. I think that things like wind tunnel time and CFD and all those things that that have limits on them now, and also the cost cap, that you just can't throw money and resources at things, at problems, and expect them to go away. And I think that they just had some problems when it came down to the design of the car when they came into this current set of technical regs a couple of years ago, and they just haven't been able to solve it. I mean, you know, Lewis, I think, is always very generous. He's not that kind of person that will throw people throw people under the bus or be very, very negative about things. I mean, you know, you can tell when you kind of read between the lines when he says we're not obviously not happy about with the performance in those first couple of races. You know, that's Lewis saying, yeah, I'm not happy about the I'm not very happy at all. And then he goes on to say that, you know, there's more potential in the car that they haven't quite extracted yet, and that's almost a control C control V copy and paste comment from the last year or so. Anyhow, we'll see what happens with them. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. They'll get it figured out at some point, but it kind of just makes you wonder that at some point, where are they going to kind of like cut their losses and kind of work towards the next era? And I know 2026 is still a little while ways off, but they'll once they can focus on that properly, I think Mercedes will kind of like go all in on that, and there'll be like this intervening period between their dominance of the previous decade coming to the into the 20s, and it hasn't been that great, and then maybe at some point they start looking towards the future post 2026. We'll see. Anyhow, we'll be keeping an eye on Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, and George Russell all weekend long. Anyways, Fernando Alonso said he won't let any other people besides himself dictate his destiny in Formula One. He said that he's fully in charge of his career in Formula One. I mean, he's 42 years old, still driving a good, as good as he ever has. So, I mean, the reasons for him saying that is that, of course, Lewis Hamilton left Ferrari. You know, there's all this talk about who's going to go to Mercedes. You know, Max is that big name, but Fernando's name has been thrown in there as well. I mean, he's had a pretty good stint at Aston Martin over the last couple of years. I mean, he was at Alpine before that, and that wasn't really all that great. And I don't think we should throw a lot on Fernando's plate for that, or point fingers, because that is just a dumpster fire in real time. And that team is just, it's just a mess, right? Anyways, Fernando has been linked to that empty seat, currently empty seat at Mercedes for next year. Fernando is pretty solid that when it comes to saying that he won't rely on other people making the decision for him, and he'll do whatever he feels is best for him. The two-time world champ said, quote, "I've always been that way. Sometimes it did help me. Sometimes it hurt me to be the owner of my destiny. I choose when to go from a team, when to join a team. I chose when to stop F1, and I chose when to come back. And now I will choose what I do next year. I will not follow what others do, and they will dictate my destiny. I will do it for my own, for good or bad. That is the way I am." End quote. So absolutely, I think Fernando really noted, nailed it on the head. You know, it's just that last sentence there. He says, "For good or bad, this is the way that I am." And I don't think that there's any debating or dispute there that over the course of his career that he's burned some bridges and probably upset some more than a few people. And it's kind of funny, we talk about reading between the lines of that previous story I was talking about with Lewis Hamilton and his comments about the Mercedes, hit Lewis being a little bit understated, Fernando here being definitely understated, saying sometimes it hurt me to be the owner of my destiny. Well, yeah, absolutely it did. He's always kind of looked out for himself, and more power to you if you can do that, and you can find the situation that's best for you and leverage that, then why not? I think the interesting thing when it comes to Fernando Alonso, I mean, we're almost 20 years away from the last time he won a world championship. I mean, he won his first world championship in 2005. That's 19 years ago, people. And then he won back to back. He won in 05 and 06, and here we are almost 20 years later. So, I mean, obviously he was pretty young when he won those two chips, being in his early 20s. But the thing is, I mean, he's been a controversial and polarizing figure over the years. And, sitting here talking on the podcast this time last year, when he had that great start to the season, he had all those, podium finishes in the first third of the season. He was laughing, he was smiling, he was chuckling. And I had a real tough time reconciling the Fernando Alonso I was seeing this time last year to the Fernando Alonso that, I'd become used to over the past, decade and a half, pardon me. And kind of thinking at the time, it's just like, I don't know if I'm good with this, because I've never really, admittedly never been a huge fan of, I respected who he is as a racer, but I was one of those people that could count myself that in the camp of people that didn't like the way that Fernando kind of conducted himself and his business and things like that. And here I was watching him and doing good things in that Aston Martin last year, and watching him in interviews and things like that, obviously, and enjoying himself. I'm just like, he should have been like this all in all this time. I think it would have been a lot easier to take. Anyways, we'll keep an eye on him. I mean, it must be nice at 42 years old and still have a lot more to offer the sport, and have maybe the choice of a couple of pretty nice picks for where you might go next year. I mean, Aston Martin, I think there's a lot of potential still left in that team. I think they've got they're nowhere near their peak just yet. I think I believe Lawrence Stroll when he says that this is a team that they want to become world champions, that they want to win races, they want to win championships and all that good stuff. I think he's putting his money where his mouth is, and I think that's a good place to be if you're a driver. And then who could ever turn up the opportunity to race for Mercedes? Because when it comes to teams that are maybe not quite at the peak and maybe struggling a little bit, you have to think that curve for Mercedes would be a little bit shorter in terms of the time taken to turn it around. So we'll keep our eyes on Fernando Alonso. That one definitely not over yet. I want to just talk really quickly about Carlos Sainz. Obviously, he was in free practice earlier today, and as FP2 just starts up, Carlos Sainz is there again. So, you know, we have to remember this time 2 weeks ago, he was in hospital he was suffering from appendicitis. He's had a couple of weekends off to recuperate, but still, you know, that's a very, very, short turnaround. Carlos had to say, quote, "At the time, it was honestly very difficult to know it was appendicitis. What I know is that on Wednesday, I started to feel really bad in the paddock and I got the typical symptoms of food poisoning. I don't think I need to go into details of what that is. I also got a very high fever and I spent Thursday also with those symptoms, but it was obviously with medication. When I was jumping in the car, I was feeling a lot better because I was getting the medication. But then after those two sessions, I realized it cannot keep going like this for the whole weekend. So if I'm not improving, I'll go to the hospital. I didn't improve. And on the morning of Friday, which was qualifying day, I went to the hospital and got diagnosed with appendicitis, which is not easy to diagnose because of my analysis and the tests they were doing. It was not clear. So I didn't have the typical symptoms of appendicitis, but they were pretty convinced it could be. And I got the surgery done. And it was a great job from the doctors because as soon as I got it removed, I felt back to normal, back to being feeling better. Obviously, with the surgery, I could start focusing on recovering. So there you go. He goes on to say, every day I'm feeling a lot better. Now I do every 24 hours that I do a lot of progress. It is true that the first week was tough, a lot of time in bed and recovering. And that's when you see things a bit darker. But then in the second week, the recovery speeds up a lot and I started to feel a lot better. So yeah, I'm confident that I can jump in the car tomorrow and do well. Obviously, I put together a very strong recovery plan since day one that I landed back home to be ready for this race," end quote. So there you go. Still, you know, that's 2 weeks, since this guy's had surgery. So not necessarily he'll be back at his peak, but certainly hope to see good things from Carlos Sainz this weekend. Nico Hülkenberg, the Haas driver, said that Oliver Bierman, who deputized and filled in for Carlos Sainz the other weekend, who had a very, very impressive, debut outing in the Ferrari a couple of weeks ago, will be very, very, well, it'll be forgotten if he doesn't perform and continue to do good in Formula 2 and F2. He was interviewed by Adam Cooper over at motorsport.com. He was asked about Bierman. He said, quote, "I think it's very early and way too early to save that," you know, when talking about the success that he had and perhaps getting a promotion. Quote, "I think it's very early and way too early to say that. I think he's got a big job on his hands in F2, first of all, because otherwise, if he's not doing so well there, this Jeddah race is going to be forgotten in 2 days. You know how this business works. So I think it's quite a bit of pressure on him to deliver now in F2, actually." End quote. So there you go. That is, fair enough. I think that, Bierman has a lot on his plate, but it was a great story. You know, I think that when it came to, you know, what was a fairly uninspiring and not a very enjoyable race to watch, that Oliver Bierman was a real bright spot. So lastly, finally, we have a fun story to talk about, and this is the character that is Valtteri Bottas, and he was talking about that, that now that he's at Sauber, which used to be Alfa Romeo Racing after he left Mercedes a couple of years ago, that he didn't have the confidence to go and star in these funny commercial and ads that he's been doing more recently than when he was at Mercedes. he's done some different adverts on television where he's like stripped down to his underwear and things like that. But there's a funny one that he's done for out of the Australian Grand Prix this week, and he's done a TV promo for Uber, and it really is funny because he talks about his love for Australian culture, food, and fashion, and it's funny because apparently he recorded the ad in just 6 hours, not too long after he got to Australia a couple of years ago, or a couple of days ago. And it's funny because, I mean, Bottas, I mean, he's kind of got the whole 80s thing going on with the big mustache, the mullet, and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, it's good to see, and it's fun to watch, you know, somebody out there, you know, having some fun, not taking himself so seriously. And it's kind of funny to see that that Bottas is a bit of a cheeky side to it. Anyways, when he was asked about it, he said, quote, "I think I would have struggled with my confidence to do something like that when I was at Mercedes. But I think as just a bit more age, a bit more experience, I've learned not to take myself too seriously. Obviously, I have a connection with Australia, with my better half being Australian. And most of our off seasons, we spend it in Australia. I like the lifestyle. I like the people. Filming the advert was fun. It was actually pretty straight off the plane when I landed in Australia. Got it done, but it was so much fun." End quote. So there you go. It's pretty funny. You know, he goes on to say that, you know, the production team, they put it all together. They came up with the idea. And when he saw the idea that they had for the commercial, he said basically, "I think that would be a great thing. It'd be a good thing for me to do." So go look it up on social media or YouTube and places like that. If you need a bit of a laugh, go and check it out, because it's pretty good stuff. All right, going to park it there for now. Thank you, one and all, for listening to the show this week. Oh, I just noticed in the mailbag, we just had one tweet tonight from Carlos at old_vinyls, and just talking about Valtteri Bottas. Carlos is asking the question, is Valtteri Bottas the best spokesman ever? And I think, yeah, you got to put him up there. Maybe not in the history of the earth, but certainly, and it's going to be the best spokesman in and around the, you know, the Australia Grand Prix and things like that this weekend. And I love seeing Valtteri having a bit of fun and not taking things so seriously. I think it's good stuff. Okay, well, thank you very much. Just going to leave it there for now. Remember, if you like the show, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave us a rating and review. I'd really, really appreciate that. Give us a follow on X at Scootery F1 Pod. And if you got something to say a little bit longer than that, you can either slide into my DMs or, you know, head on over to the old email and punch out, type out an email. You can send that to me at scuderiafmpod@gmail.com. All right, that's a wrap. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Grand Prix. Be back on Sunday to wrap this one up. And then we'll be off to the next round, which I'm not even sure where it is, but I'll figure that out pretty soon. I'm just kidding. I don't schedule very well. Have a great weekend, everyone. Talk to you again soon. Bye for now.